I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Serena Williams won her 21st Grand Slam at Wimbledon earlier this summer, and it looks like she's poised to win the U.S. Open at Forest Hills. And while she's probably the greatest female tennis player ever, much of the commentary about her has been critical of her body, comparing her to a man because of her muscles, her strong arms and legs. Our guest, Elizabeth Wellington, wrote about this for the Philadelphia Inquirer, where she is fashion reporter. And Elizabeth, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning, Marty. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. Let me introduce our other guest. Amy Farrell is professor of American Studies and Women's and Gender Studies at Dickinson College, where she is executive director of the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues, wrote a book called Fat Shame, Stigma and the Body Fat, Stigma and the Fat Body in American Culture. Amy Farrell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's wonderful to be here.
Elizabeth, let me start with you. So what are people saying about Serena Williams' body?
Well, people have been chatting about it for a while, probably for a couple of years now. But in the last, I'd say, during this last win, there was a lot of chat about her body, saying that her muscle, the shape of her muscles and her power is more manly. So there have been so many comments like, of course she's winning. She's built like a man, which, you know, it just kind of rise to the top in the last week or so, and it's just really disheartening because she's worked so hard and she's done so well. And to say, you know, one of the worst things you can say to a woman is that, you know, you're built like a man. I mean, that's hard for us to take. And it's not true in this case, because if you've seen Serena, she has an amazing shape and she's just very strong. So I think that people are sort of taking their own limitations and trying to put that on her. And it's gotten out of hand. So I felt like I had to write a column about that.
No, and I'm glad you did, because we've been talking about this and we were looking for the right people to talk to. Let me quote something that Serena Williams told the New York Times, and then Amy, I'll turn to you.
Sure.
She said, I realize that that you really have to learn to accept who you are and love who you are. I'm really happy with my body type and I'm really proud of it. And Amy, obviously this body, obviously her, you know, as a tennis player myself, it's body, but it's also mind. But this body has served her so well on the tennis court. Why are people trying to shame her?
Right. Well, I think that's an interesting question, because instead of marveling, as just exactly what you said, at her athleticism, at her, you know, the superb finesse of her body and the way that connects with her mind, in terms of being such an amazing athlete, instead of that, there's this kind of cultural denigration of her body. So for me, as a cultural historian, I look back and I say this is a long tradition that Western culture has, and particularly American culture has, and really scrutinizing the body, and particularly women's bodies. It's not that men are exempt from it, but particularly women's bodies and African-American bodies as somehow inferior, and really looking in this kind of suspect way at this body.
Well, let me turn back to you, Elizabeth. How much do you think race is a part of the criticisms of her body?
I think race is a big part of the criticism of her body, because I think that Black women in general have had to, we've sort of been marginalized, and we've been put in a place where our body image is there are certain parts about our body that's not going to be as Western and as Europeanized. And I think that and I don't understand why this is, and I've actually interviewed people about this, but I think it's more subliminal than anything. And I think when you see a body that you're used to being able to dominate over, and now this body is strong and it is still feminine, it kind of throws things for a loop. So people, meaning men, especially men who've built this American culture, don't know what to do, because she's not subservient at all, her body, and she's very strong. And I think it just sort of takes people out of the loop of what they're used to seeing and what they're used to dealing with and what they want to deal with. And it's the fastest way that you can sort of denigrate a woman is to say, well, you don't matter anymore because you look like a man. And so then it seems like all the work that she's done no longer matters. Or they try to take it away, or it's trying to be taken away, because you've just sort of erased everything with that one statement, and then people can go back to feeling superior and how one about themselves and not pay attention to her beauty and her grace and her amazingness. And well, that's just my opinion.
No, fair enough. And Elizabeth, are most of the criticisms, are they mostly coming from men as you can understand it or as you read them?
Well, as I read them, yesterday my column ran and there were 30 comments on there.
Oh, wow.
And it was, and a lot of the comments were from men who were saying, yes, we're saying, well, she should feel like this. I mean, she's a man. Of course she's going to win. But the other interesting thing is that New York Times article that you referenced was written by a man. And the part of that article that I found so offensive was that he was talking to other women who were playing tennis. And they were saying, yeah, they were quoted as saying, yeah, we could win. We could have a great body. Like, we could look like that, too. But we would rather stay looking like women than win the game. And I think that is the part that really irritated me the most, because she is that is a winning body. There's nothing there's nothing that's loser about that body at all. It's a winning body. And so at that point, I think it became the way that the article was run and printed. And I think there people have since apologized for, but it basically was pitting women against women to say, yeah, I could look like that, but why would I want to look like that? You know, I'd rather look like a woman. And the subtext is, but you lost. So I think that's where the conversation became different and a little bit more nasty to me, where I felt that as a style writer and a person who champions women and body images, I felt like I should say something about this because it was about race and about gender at that point, and it was just ridiculous.
Well, let me pick up on a couple of things that you said and toss them to you, Amy. So if we're talking about Serena Williams, and we mm-hmm. are, we're talking about a strong and successful a black woman. So you've got those four things obviously going for her, and also playing in what has typically been a very white sport. Do you think that is also sort of gotten people riled up? And here we are in 2015 having this conversation, which to me seems totally bizarre. But nonetheless, Amy, go ahead.
Yeah, there's I can't help but thinking about this wonderful web page that's run by a woman by the name of Sonia Renee Taylor, who says she's an African-American woman and a fat activist, and she writes, "The body is not an apology." And I think that what happens culturally when we see Serena Williams so powerful, so much literally at the top of her game, that there's really an attempt to make her apologize for that body. So I guess I'm really resonating with what Elizabeth was sharing, that there's somehow that she's not in her place. You know, she is in this traditionally white sport. And, you know, my own work has really focused on the way that a particular kind of body type, white and thin, was really, really constructed in the 19th century, especially as a superior body. So when we have a different person coming into that field and dominating that game, I think it really is culturally a way to bring her down. You know, I can't help but thinking when I see her winning and the kinds of attempts of mocking her of, you know, 1851 Sojourner Truth, the famous suffragist and abolitionist, raising her really strong arms and saying, you know, I've plowed and I've raised these children and I work so hard and, you know, ain't I a woman? Her famous her famous speech. She's, you know, claiming that space of, I too am a woman, and don't make me feel bad about who I am and what my body is, and don't say I'm lesser because of that.
You know, Elizabeth, it's interesting, and there is a commercial I've seen Serena Williams in. I forget what it's for, but she's playing tennis and, you know, doing what she does, showing off those beautiful arms and legs. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is when you compare her and Sharapova, who she mostly beats on the tennis court, Sharapova has many more endorsements than Serena Williams.
Right, and there was a lot of talk about that, and I think that's the bottom line. It's like, Serena is a winner. She, you know, her. You can talk about her body. It could be an aesthetic thing, but she has won, you know, with that body. And if you see her out off the court, she looks amazing in everything that she wears. And it kind of reminds me of something, the way that people were treating Michelle Obama when she first became first lady, and she was wearing these wonderful sheets and she was showing off these muscled arms. And the first thing that these detractors said about her is that she wasn't a woman. Mm-hmm. Well, she looks like a man. And then there was, you know, conversations about, you know, and it even almost becomes animalistic. Like, you know, these are people and these are women with beautiful bodies. I mean, I would kill to have Michelle Obama on. And I would kill. I can't, you know, lift enough weight to have those arms or to have Serena's build. And it becomes, you know, I think what it is about, frankly, it's saying, okay, just like Amy was saying, you've got these women, they're strong, they're in these bodies, and people are still looking for ways and reasons not to treat them as human beings or to say their accomplishments don't matter because they are not like us. And people will not admit it, but I think it's one of those things that's much more subliminal because it's a message that's direct, but at the same time, if you can treat someone as not human or not the person that they define themselves to be, then it's a quick way to say that they don't matter. And I think even though Serena's winning, it's a way that people can say, well, she's winning, but it doesn't matter. She looks like a man. Yeah. And I think that's the bottom line.
Interesting email from Richard. That. I don't know the answer to this, but he said it should be noted that there are internet rumors that tennis also has a performance-enhancing drug problem and that Serena's mm-hmm. muscular body, along with Nadal and others, may be suspect. Now, you know, rumors are one thing. The truth is something else. But and we have mm-hmm. to say goodbye to you in just a couple of minutes, Elizabeth. I mean, is that something we should factor mm-hmm. into this conversation?
It was funny. Someone sent me an email about that yesterday. And to me, the bottom line is I'm not saying that she is taking these body enhancement drugs at all, but she's still a woman. Like, even if she was taking, there was rumors that Bruce Jenner was taking body enhancement drugs back in the day. I mean, these rumors are out there all the time, mm-hmm. but no one said that he wasn't a man when he was playing sports and he was identifying as a man. No one was saying that he wasn't a man. Even when you have, like Lance Armstrong, he was taking body enhancement. He was still a man. And that's the bottom line. Like, whether she's taking drugs, whether she is, however she's going to enhance her body, the argument here is that we should not be trying to dismiss her as a human being or dismiss her as the person that she is because there's a problem with her winning or not winning. She's a woman, and that's at the heart of that insult is just it's unfair and it's not right and it's based in racist and gender bias that we shouldn't stand for anymore.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us once again on Radio Times today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Again, Elizabeth Wellington, she's a fashion reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, wrote a piece yesterday about Serena Williams and all the criticism she's been getting about her body, the shaming of her body. We're going to take a very short break. Amy Farrell staying with us for the rest of the hour. She's a professor of American Studies and Women's and Gender Studies at Dickinson College, heads up the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues. This is certainly a contemporary issue. And we've got a lot of comments here, and I see calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. We will move on from Serena Williams' body, although I have a couple of more questions I do want to put to Amy Farrell. But we do want to talk about body image, generally speaking, and body shaming. There's a lot of that going on. We got to deal with that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. I've been talking with Amy Farrell about Serena Williams and the hateful comments about her strong and athletic bodies. And that got us thinking that if haters are going after this extraordinary athlete, what about the rest of us with our with our muffin tops and our spare tires? Do we like what we see when we look in the mirror? Why are we so critical of other people's bodies? And we've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Amy, it's interesting to be talking about Serena Williams, and I'm also thinking about the women's soccer team that won the World Cup, seeing them play on the field, obviously a mix of bodies depending on what position that they had. Making me wonder whether, you know, what athletes are doing, especially female athletes, are doing for us in terms of helping us understand what a body can do and what a body looks like when it can do those extraordinary things.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think, you know, for myself, I was born in 1963. When I was a kid, really, there was a lot of pressure for girls not to be athletic or certainly not to show it in their bodies. They might be, you know, good enough at tennis or good enough at whatever, but they weren't supposed to show that in their body. And I do really think we have to look back at the you know, advent of Title IX and the possibilities for girls to start playing sports in really major ways, that we do have a much bigger sense of what happens to girls' bodies when they are allowed to be athletic. Do you know? So we do see a huge, you know, range of body types, and that's the human, you know, experience across male, female, transgender, fat, small, you know, strong, thin. Bodies come in all different sizes and shapes. In fact, I was thinking about that wonderful cover of with Amanda Bingson, you know, the hammer thrower on the ESPN body cover, and her saying, look, this is my body. I'm not sculpted, and but look at what my body can do.
Let me just read a couple of emails here. An email from Adam who says, those who criticize Serena Williams about her body are jealous of her success and the hard work that she put herself through in eating well, exercising correctly to become the repeat tennis star that she is. Sexy comes in many forms, he says. There's nothing sexier than a woman who knows what she wants and fights to get it. An email from Joe, he says, as a white male, I can say I believe that all the criticism of Serena Williams is about jealousy, and all my tennis friends agree with me.
So, no, that's interesting.
Well, it's nice to hear from men. And I mean, yeah, because we're so judgmental of other people's bodies. Are we not, Amy?
Well, you know, I think there's a whole movement to encourage people not to be so jealous and judgmental of each other's bodies. But certainly we see that played out. And for me, looking at this culturally instead of just sort of individually, like the individual psyche being jealous of Serena Williams, I would say it, you know, speaks to maybe what Elizabeth was saying as well, that it's not just an individual psychological thing, but it's a whole way that a kind of culture keeps certain people in power and doesn't allow other people to have power. So if if we really as a culture tell girls, don't go too far with training for that sport because you'll no longer look like a woman, you know, that resonates back to 19th century stuff. If girls started to exercise, they were described as being inverts, you know, which was the word then used for lesbian, you know, not quite a woman. So I think that we need to look at the way that it keeps sort of a certain kind of power hierarchy in place when we throw out those kind of judgments.
And how far back do we have to go back to find evidence of body shaming?
Well, you know, my own work goes back really into the early part of the 19th century, and I know that we can go back further than that, but certainly there's lots of evidence from it, from certainly the middle to early part of the 19th century, especially as, as we had movements that started to be, that really gained strength, the movement to end slavery, and the movement to give women more rights, because if we remember back, you know, in the early part of the 19th century, women had very few rights, for property over their own bodies, certainly couldn't vote. As those movements started to push forward, it's interesting that sort of a culture came into play that could keep women and people of color in their place.
In their place because of their bodies?
Because of their bodies. So if you have, people always scrutinizing their own bodies and thinking, my body isn't acceptable the way it is, and I have to do all these things to make my body acceptable, it means both that you're taking away their power to do other things, and you're making them feel bad about themselves, and you're giving sort of cultural rights for them to be mocked and shamed about what kind of body they have.
But where do we get these ideas about what a body is supposed to look like? And I do want a larger conversation talking about men and women, but we're focusing largely on women. Where did that ideal come from?
Well, if we go way back into that 19th century time period, that came from everything from magazine writers, ministers, but also scientists and physicians who talked about what the superior human being was. And the superior human being was always male in those writings, was white, and was, for a man, toned and strong, and for a woman, very thin. So, if one's body can't fit into that model, you weren't allowed, really, there was kind of no ability to present oneself as really superior. Today, I think those ideas are still in practice, but we pick them up through our families, through our school systems, certainly through media. Everything from movies to the print stuff to everything that's on the internet. It's funny because my own work, you know, I'm connected with a lot of people who are studying, you know, bodies and fat, and because the internet has that way to pick up words that you're using.
Yes, exactly.
I get so many ads for weight loss, like way more than other people do, which I find pretty humorous because it's just picking up fat. So it's presuming that I'm hating fat and shooting me all those advertisements.
Yeah. In fact, we've done shows about how that works. What's so interesting, though, and every now and then, you know, these glamorous magazines will show what models really look like without all the airbrushing and all the touching up that can happen in a photo spread. So we are comparing ourselves to people that actually don't really exist.
Right. It's a mirage. It's absolutely a mirage. But, you know, I think there's been some interesting studies about that, though, that even though we might know something is fake, when we're bombarded with those images all the time, we still sort of internalize those as real. So certainly we can see that with the way that we have kind of distorted body image. And that's where I also need to, you know, point out that there are people making a lot of money from our dissatisfaction as well. You know, there's over $68 billion diet industry. In the United States, that's just for weight loss. That doesn't include all the other kinds of things that we do in terms of cosmetic surgery, et cetera, to change the way that we look.
Are most people dissatisfied with how they look, dissatisfied with their bodies?
You know, I haven't actually read the most recent studies that I've read certainly suggest that's the case. But I would also want to emphasize that there is an entire movement of people who are working to challenge that. And, you know, sometimes it's a fine line. I mean, that would be something that I'm sure Elizabeth could have spoken about as well, which is between what is it that we're doing. You know, every culture does things to make themselves look beautiful, to embellish themselves, to represent, you know, a good-looking body or a good-looking, just beauty and fun with beauty. Mm-hmm. But there's a fine line, and maybe I think sometimes in our culture it becomes not a fine line, between doing things to make ourselves look beautiful and feel beautiful and doing things because really we're not acceptable, our bodies are not acceptable as they are. So really bringing that hammer down on our own bodies and on other people's bodies.
Elizabeth made a reference to, you know, body parts, mm-hmm. and thinking of mm-hmm. a woman's body, you know, thinking of breasts, thinking of butts, you know, for lack of a better scientific word. There's so much focus on those two body parts.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And, you know, those are the markers of the, you know, the feminine body, the things that really mark a female body as being different from a male body. But they're also really accentuated in our culture. Do you know, in other cultures historically, breasts were not necessarily so eroticized, you know, as they are in this culture. There's always a weird thing as well that we have, you know, the expectation that a woman would have a very thin body but yet very big breasts, which is not something that one finds commonly in nature. So people do all sorts of cosmetic surgery in order to acquire that kind of body. I also think that, you know, one of the gender differences here, and I'm speaking in kind of broad generalities because people's life experiences sometimes differ, but that a woman is really prized for what she looks like, and that is being emphasized from the time she's a little girl, as compared to being push to express your body, and that the importance is how competent and how useful your body is, what your body can do, which I think is more encouraged in boys than it is in girls as well.
And that's Amy Farrell from Dickinson College. We are talking about body image. We've been talking about body shaming. And we got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. A lot of comments as well. RadioTimes@WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Dan from Lawrenceville to join us. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love the show.
Thanks.
And I think this is an important issue and one that we should be talking about more often. But it seems like, you know, whenever we do talk about this, it's because of, you know, comments like the ones that guests were talking about before. And my question, I guess, was, you know, when we have these conversations in response to comments like that, are we simply validating those comments?
Do you hear that on the show? I mean, do you hear us validating those comments on the show today, Dan?
Well, by speaking about them, I think, you know, in response to this, it's reactionary. And so in a way, you're giving the comments that were made, I think, some validity.
Hmm. Well,
and rather than sort of just having the discussion generally. And I think Demi is doing a good job of the discussion.
Okay.
Well, anyway, but, you know.
No, I hear you. I mean, to be honest with you, this is what we do on the show, which is respond to things that are going on in the world and finding people who can talk about it. Do you think, Amy, we're feeding into the hateful comments by talking about them?
Well, you know, the one thing that I would say is probably a danger for all of us is that if you talk about some things, it can normalize it. So it can become then it's just normal for girls and women to hate their bodies. Do you know, as opposed to shifting the conversation to say, why do we have this kind of commentary there? So I would say it's not that we shouldn't talk about it. That reminds me of saying, you know, we shouldn't talk about race. That's what's creating racism. We shouldn't talk about, you know, gender. That's what's creating sexism. I don't agree with that. I think that there's something to be said, though, for the fact that we need to be cautious about how we talk about things, that we don't want to just say it's just normal, you know, that girls hate their bodies. Look, even Serena Williams is uncomfortable with her body. And I would say, actually, Serena Williams in some of her commentaries where she was, you know, discussing what she does or doesn't do with her body or that she's had some doubts, she was just being honest, you know, which I just think it's like, and what human being hasn't had doubts about things sometimes? And that doesn't mean that we're normalizing that, see, even she has doubts about her body.
Thanks for the call, Dan, to Radio Times. And again, you can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Amy, it's so interesting when I see pictures of Marilyn Monroe, you know, just the sex goddess of the 1950s. You know, she has a little weight on her, and you compare her to these scarily thin stars that we see today. One wonders, what has happened? Why is skinniness so valued?
Yeah, I think that's a good point because it's not what I think we also notice about her body is that it's soft, you know, that she's just sort of rounded looking. And I think a couple of things. One is, and that's where I wanted, you know, where I pointed out before earlier that our bodies come in all different shapes and sizes. So I think that one of the downsides of a kind of culture that has actually seen the growth of athletic female bodies, of very toned and very strong female bodies, is a presumption that that's the correct body for a girl or a woman to have, as long as it doesn't go over a certain line. Because some people's bodies are never going to look like that, and maybe they don't want to look like that. Maybe their bodies just don't look like that. I also think, though, that we, at the same time that we have, you know, the growth of what many people call the obesity epidemic, although I challenge that language, that there's really this kind of valorization of the thin body as the superior body. And that started in the 19th century. And we really see that in a strong way today.
Is that because the thin person allegedly can control themselves and it means they don't have the same kind of appetites as other people?
Absolutely. And they can control their appetites. They don't necessarily show their quote unquote animal desires, as in eating, you know, on their bodies, that somehow theirs is the superior controlled body. Compared to other bodies. And the other reality is different, you know, different people show weight in different ways. And so, you know, in my own book, I trace this back to some of those 19th century physicians and scientists talking about the African body as being inferior because of the way that it more traditionally showed weight on the buttocks, for instance. And so, you know, some of these things are really complicated and tied in with race and with gender, but what they function in the long run, in the big picture, I would say, is to make many people feel like their bodies are inferior and also to give credence to people who mock others. So that's one thing I would really want to make sure listeners think about is the fact that a kind of culture that values thinness also gives a kind of carte blanche to mock and to discriminate against fat people. And so that is, you know, a real significant problem, I think.
Well, we're having this conversation during the bathing suit season, you know,
right.
And I'm someone that loves to go to the beach and I love to actually watch people at the beach. And what I find is that, and people obviously in bathing suits, whether one piece or two piece or those one pieces that almost act like a girdle holding everything in.
Keep pushing it up.
Right? Keep pushing it up, exactly, so it doesn't leak out at all. But what I also notice is that you do see unbelievably mix of body parts. And some people who clearly are not model thin pull it off with a great deal of confidence. They look sexy. They look great. But you'd never see them in a fashion magazine.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, including the fact that, you know, plus size models start at size 6 or something. Do you know? I mean, to me, like a tiny size.
It is a tiny size.
Yes. And that's where plus size modeling starts with. Yeah, and in fact, I think there was that recent ad in both England and in the United States, you know, is your body beach ready? And, you know, I love this among my, you know, fat activist friends and colleagues who had campaigns saying, you know, every body is beach ready. If you have a body and you have a beach, you have a beach ready body. But, you know, I think it's true that it's the kind of level of confidence that people have and joy people have that is, you know, why people look happy on the beach. But the reality is, for a lot of fat people, there's a lot of mockery that happens going into public places, and especially public places where they're actually showing and enjoying their bodies. And that's pretty tremendous. So that, it's not something insignificant. The reverse of catcall is just horrible things said to people, people throwing things, or just being told that they're unacceptable.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, Amy, we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about body image and body shaming, an explosion of phone calls here at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Waiting in the wings is Solomon Jones. He'll be talking about his dad body. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about body image and body shaming with Amy Farrell, professor of American Studies, Women's and Gender Studies, also executive director of the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues at Dickinson College. And joining us now is Solomon Jones. He's a columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, morning host for 900 AM WURD radio here in Philadelphia, and his blog, The Philadelphia Experiment, is published on WHYY's site, newsworks.org, and he wrote about his dad bod most recently. And Solomon Jones, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
So what's a dad bod, Solomon?
So a dad bod, as defined by the college sophomore Mackenzie Pearson, who wrote about it, is, and I quote, a nice balance between a beer gut and working out. The dad bod says, I go to the gym occasionally, but I also drink heavily on the weekend and enjoy eating 8 slices of pizza at a time. So that's her, her definition of a dad bod. And I've got to say, I don't eat 8 slices of pizza at a time. Right. I achieve my dad bod the Philadelphia way. With cheesesteaks, and so
you go.
I go to the gym occasionally. I do, and my family just made me buy this family membership for the gym. So I think I fit. I've got 3 children, and I am very proud of my dad bod. I think I earned it, one succulent bite at a time.
Well, let me get Amy in on that conversation. Is there a mom bod to go along with the dad bod?
I think there is, but I don't think it's held with quite so much, you know. I think that quotation by that college student is that's a very lovable body.
Yes.
You know, that's and certainly very acceptable, kind of every man, you know, that it's still good looking, but it shows that you're just enjoying your life and having, you know, and just being part of life, just engaged in the center of your life. And I think the mom bod has a different connotation, you know, which is that it's a woman who's let herself go, you know, that she's had her children and she doesn't get enough exercise. She doesn't care about herself anymore, as opposed to, I think, a dad bod has, you know, and I think that really speaks to the fact that we do give a bigger allowance to what kinds of sizes and shapes men's bodies can come into, where women, so not that men are exempt from body image issues,
right,
but that there's a bigger allowance. And for women, there's a much smaller allowance of what they're supposed to be.
Solomon, I mean, do you like your dad bod? Are you comfortable with your dad bod?
I'm very comfortable with my dad bod. You know, I'm not a person who's, like, really out of shape. I think my problem is that my cheese steaks and I just had some fish and grits, they go to my stomach. That's okay. Where they go. And they live there for quite some time. But, you know, I do push-ups every day. I'm now going to the gym occasionally, but I'm not trying to look like Adonis. And I think part of the problem with body image is it depends on culture. I know there's been a lot of talk about Serena Williams. I think I speak for the vast majority of black men, and I don't do that often. Serena Williams is bad. Serena Williams is like the body type that black men like. And so I think the problem with her body type is in the larger culture where people think that thinness is what it's all about. But I think when you look in the African-American culture, it's not necessarily about that. And so I think we have different standards.
Well, and that's exactly what we were talking about earlier in the hour. Let me get a caller in. This is Paul from Chester joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. I agree completely with Solomon. I am a great fan of Serena. I think she's gorgeous and have a total crush on her. I am always incensed when somebody looks at a strong, athletic woman and says she looks like a man. Have you seen most men? I don't think many of them actually look that good. I think that's something about male ego more than anything else.
Well, that's interesting, and I do want to quote J.K. Rowling. Apparently, she's gotten into a whole sort of Twitter argument over Serena Williams' body, and the critics saying, you know, she looks like a man. And J.K. Rowling wrote back, "Yeah, my husband looks just like this in a dress. You're an idiot." Back to the person.
I agree completely with her.
Paul, I appreciate your call to Radio Times. Solomon, anything you want to say in response?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think a lot of times you have cultural critics and people of that ilk trying to tell us what we should think or what we should find attractive. And that's just not true for most people unless they are looking for someone to tell them what to think. But I think that, you know, our tastes are determined a lot of times by culture. Our tastes are determined by, you know, personally. And so to have someone else telling us that Serena Williams is not attractive, she looks like a man, well, that's your opinion, but I don't share it, and I don't think the vast majority of men share it either.
Solomon, final question to you. As you said, you got a gym membership. Sounds like you were goaded a bit by your family to join the gym.
It is a great story.
It is a great story. I mean, how much do you want to change this dad bod of yours, or is it just to sort of mitigate against the ravages of time?
You know, my feeling is that I earned this dad bod. Like, I had to work hard to get this gut. You know, I had to eat a lot of cheese. I had to spend a lot of money, and it's mine, and I want to keep it. And so, you know, I'll do my push-ups. I'll do my walking. I'll do a little bit of running every once in a while, maybe lift some weights every couple of years. But other than that, you know, I like myself the way that I am. I'm satisfied with myself. As long as my wife likes it, I'm good. So, yeah, they go to me into doing it, and I'm telling them that they really have to use this gym membership because, again, I could buy a lot of cheesesteaks with the money that I'm paying for this membership.
Indeed, you could. Well, Solomon, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Yes, indeed. Solomon Jones, again, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, a morning host at WURD, and he writes a blog for Newsworks here at WHYY, the Philadelphia Experiment. I do want to get back to our callers, but Amy, it's so interesting to hear from Solomon, and you know, he's been on the show before, so I know exactly what he looks like. Here's a guy, you know, who says, look, I do have a little bit of a gut, but I'm proud of it. I worked hard on this. This is mine. I'm going to enjoy myself. I wish more women could say that.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I just wanted to pick up on both what Solomon was talking about and what your caller had mentioned is this kind of rhetoric about what kind of women men should find attractive. And I was thinking about two things. One is when I was doing my research, I found all these postcards and political cartoons and things that were really teaching men, especially white men, if they were middle class or, you know, kind of aspiring to a higher class status, that they did not like fat women. It was really making fun of them if they would be going out with a fat woman or finding a fat woman, you know, romantically attractive. And that, you know, it speaks to me as well to that. I don't know if you saw that article that's been going around about my wedding was perfect and I was fat as hell the whole time, you know, by Lindy West that came out in The Guardian. And she said, you know, I'm a fat woman. And I told my boyfriend, who then became her fiancé, that if we're going to get engaged, I want it to be a really public moment of engagement. I don't want that kind of secret dating the fat woman, but in public you won't, you know, own up to me or actually express the fact that you're interested in me. And I think that's really an important part is for us to be thinking about the fact that men might be interested in all different kinds of bodies, but that it's not good for that to be underground.
Let me get Carol from Wilmington, Delaware, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my phone call. This has been a really interesting conversation as a mother of an African-American teenager who is built somewhat like Serena. I think as an older African-American woman, it is very easy for me to accept myself and my build. But I think for teenagers, this conversation is totally different and much more hurtful to them because they are swayed so much by public conversation. And it just distressed me to see that when Serena won the championship at Wimbledon, how the other young lady got more cheers and just than even Serena. And it's just like, does an African-American woman or young lady have to do to be accepted? And I guess what increasingly bounces back to us is we can do nothing. We can be the First Lady of the United States. We can win Wimbledon. And we're still viewed as somewhat diminished.
Well, Carol, I'm sorry that you feel that way, and I do appreciate the call, and you raised so many interesting points, including the fact that you have a teenage daughter. And I think if I can segue to you, Amy, for teenagers, I mean, teenagers struggle with their body image, I think, in the most overt kinds of ways because it's changing and they're changing, and this is such a difficult transition in life.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I just want to speak to your caller as well that I think your point is really well taken. What I would say, though, is that we can't give up.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, I think what we're talking about is a culture that's changing, you know, and when a culture changes, there's going to be resistance because those who perceive that their power was based on putting other people in their place, they're not going to necessarily let go of that. And there's a lot of financial interest in not letting go of that as well. So I think that, but there's a lot of movement to challenge that. And so I think it's about not being discouraged with our young people. But I absolutely think this is true. And so when I see a kind of culture that is fat denigrating, I especially worry about our young people, particularly when I see the kind of rise in weight loss surgeries, which are extraordinarily dangerous and mean that especially if you had it as a young person, you have no idea how that body that will then have been mutilated will actually be able to withstand aging, the rise in eating disorders and all different kinds of disordered eating, the kind of discrimination people face because of their body size, their skin color, their gender. Those are all things I think that it's important for us to kind of work together to resist those forces. But I would just resonate with the fact that it's hard not to be discouraged sometimes, but that we can't be.
Well, Carolyn, I think of certainly how Michelle Obama is looked at today. I mean, she's more popular than her husband. I think probably more popular than a lot of people, a lot of public figures in this country. So perhaps a sign of some small progress. Let me get Allison from Malvern to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Allison. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm 47 and was fortunate to have a pretty good metabolism, but come from a pretty traditional family where my dad was very physically active and my mom wasn't because she had pretty rapid metabolism like I did. But when I hit about 38 and after I had my three children, my metabolism tanked and I now whereas I never had to really worry about saying about the same size, I now have that mom bod, mm-hmm. and I hate it. It's very depressing to me, and so I've been trying to, you know, sort of work more exercise into my life. But I have two daughters, and just as you were talking about, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and I have an 8-year-old daughter. And I'm trying really hard to model for my daughters what my mom didn't know she needed to model for me, I think, and didn't, you know, need for herself, that I want them to be active. I want them to be healthy. I want them to take care of themselves, not because it's important what they look like, per se, although I'd like them just to have healthy bodies, athletic bodies, so that they can do whatever they want to do, and also with the hope that when they get to be 38 and their metabolism starts to tank like everybody's mm-hmm. do, that they won't find themselves where I am, I'm struggling so hard to create put more exercise into my life where it's never needed space before. So I'm now having to carve out time for something that's uncomfortable and unpleasant for me in order to be healthier so I can be well for my children and also to show them how they should sure. take care of themselves.
I hear you. One thing you said before we go to Amy, one thing you said, Allison, is that you hate your body.
I do. I hate how it looks now. I don't, and not because no one has said anything to me and my husband has never said anything unkind about it. It's not the mm-hmm. image that I've had for most of my life in my head. You know, I think you have an image in your head of who you are. And then when you look in the mirror and that the person that looks back at you now is very different than how you think about yourself, it's jarring. And that's something that I'm having a really difficult time coming to terms with.
Well, you know, I don't think you're alone in this, Allison. And let me give Amy Farrell a chance to weigh in on that. I'm sorry. I didn't put that right at all.
Terrible.
I did not mean to do that. Let me see what Amy Farrell has to say. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, I just really appreciate the caller's honesty. Once again, just speaking about, you know, the difficulty with bodies and body image. A couple of things came to my mind, though. One is that some of this is also, I think, wrapped up to further complicate issues in terms of fat with the kind of fear of aging. Do you know that we also have such a youth-oriented culture and also huge business that pushes us to value youth? And so as we see our bodies changing as they age, that becomes something really a negative experience for a lot of people. And the other thing that I suspect the caller doesn't know about is that because she kept mentioning the fact that her metabolism had tanked, is that actually most people don't know this, but that the more recent CDC studies, the Center for Disease Control, pointed out that the healthiest place for a woman to be as she moves into her late 40s and 50s, so actually, you know, heading towards menopause and then after menopause, is in that overweight category of BMI, overweight and even slightly obese. I mean, I'm using those categories that the CDC uses of the BMI categories. So that actually this might be something our bodies do that's protective, you know?
Interesting.
And we do all sorts of, that's what I mean, that when people say they want to be healthier, I sometimes just put question mark next to that in my head, you know, because it none of this may necessarily have to do with health.
Well, we have to end on that note. We I won't exactly say full circle, but we covered a lot of territory in this hour. Amy Farrell, thanks so much for joining us on Radio
Times. It was
great.
Thanks.
Great for us as well. And she's with Dickinson College. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Kevin Griffin, our engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.